From the Society of American Archivists, this is Archives in Context, a podcast highlighting archival literature and technologies, and most importantly, the people behind them.
Welcome to this episode of the Archives in Context podcast. My name's Anna Trammell, and I'm here with Chris Burns.
Hello.
Today, we are speaking to Lisa Posis, Head of Research Services and Archives at the Autry Museum of the American West and LAS Subject Coordinator at the USC Libraries. Lisa holds an MLIS from UCLA, and she is the recipient of the 2018 California Historical Records Advisory Board Archival Award of Excellence. Lisa is a member of the steering committee of the Society of American Archivists, Native American Archivists section, and we'll be talking with her today about the protocols for Native American archival materials and her project to create a workbook related to the protocols. Thanks for joining us today, Lisa.
You're welcome.
So the protocols were created in 2007, although they weren't endorsed by SAA until 2018. Can you talk a little bit about the protocols and what they cover?
Yeah, so the protocols are actually guidelines on how to work with Native American materials, archival materials, particularly those collections that are held in non-Native institutions. So it just goes over the different types of collaborations and approach you should have when working with these types of materials, and in particular, working with the tribes in which they represent. And I think the reason why it took a while for it to get endorsed is because it's difficult, it's challenging to capture these types of guidelines within a document. So the protocols are suggestions, but it is important to realize that it was created by the first archive circle, which included Native representatives as well as archivists and historians and librarians who worked with tribal members for a long time in how to go about best building these types of relationships. So it covers not only communication and consultation protocols, but what sort of recognition you need in approaching culturally sensitive materials, recognition and acknowledgement, rethinking ideas of public accessibility, as well as, you know, how do the rights, the intellectual property rights, the cultural property rights, the permissions that we traditionally have worked with in westernized archives, and how that changes when you're dealing with materials perhaps of cultural patrimony or items that were taken from a tribe without really their consent or knowledge of the repercussions. And it also talks, the protocols go over the ideas of community-based research, but community involvement and repatriation, as well as just being aware of the various issues that involve Native materials that are held in non-Native repositories. So it could be as easy as having the security procedures, understanding that some of the security procedures could be daunting, or understanding that the idea of fees could also be insulting, you know, because these are materials that belong to a particular tribe. You have the tribe come and visit, and then you ask them for money to photocopy or scan or provide copies of things that are from their tribe. So there's a lot of, I feel, I hate to use this term, but just shades of gray, or there's a lot of negotiation and observing that needs to be done, as well as just development of relationship, even from may seemingly be an informal development and getting to know the different members in the elder group, or getting to know what's happening with the family, or getting to know what's happening with their land, something that might not seem as connected to the materials that you have, because we are so used to having a researcher come in and researching just the materials that they need to look at for their research product, for their research project, where it's more interwoven, I feel, in my experience. And I think that's what the protocols tries to address, that this is really a thread within the cultural lifeblood of particular tribes. So it does a very valiant effort and try to cover all the various bases that also mix together, you know, what are sort of the Western traditions of archival administration and how that can be translated or turned or deconstructed to look at it from a cultural point of view.
Really, really important work, and as you say, really, really complex, and we'll get into in a little bit some of the work that you and others are doing to sort of help people work through the protocols and apply it in individual institutions. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your own story and how you got involved working with Native American archives and with the protocols in particular.
I started off, I am probably hard to tell through my voice, but I'm a first generation born American. My family are from the Philippines. And I was a pretty much a rolling stone, I'd like to say, before I really hunkered down and concentrated on getting my degree in library and information science from UCLA. But my upbringing in American schools is what propelled me to try to find out the stories in between, in particular the stories that you don't get in traditional textbooks. So I wanted to do more research on the Filipino-American experience. Like many first, second generation Americans, I feel they go through that phase. So that led me to during oral histories. It led me to traveling, and one of the places that was occupied by America and by Filipino population was the island of Guam. So I lived in Guam for about 5 years, and that is where I got involved with the indigenous Chamorro community of Guam and became close friends with different families from the villages that kind of took me on as a family member themselves, as a relative. And I started working with people who, how should I say, reclamation efforts for their languages and their dance and their culture that were, you know, taken away in a sense through the same colonial aspects as with the indigenous groups in the US. So that's where I got started. So I really got started with wanting to just have libraries, archives represent more diverse narratives. It was as simple as that, you know, and trying to bring to light archival collections that told different stories. That interest led me to a job at UC Santa Barbara, which then led me to my position here at the Autry Museum. And it's through my work with the Autry Museum, and actually I started working at the Autry in 2005. So around the same time the protocols were drafted and released to the public. So I've been following the protocols, and we've been working, you know, in step with the protocols because of the materials that are held at the Autry Museum. So the Autry Museum merged with the Southwest Museum of the American Indian, which is the first museum of Los Angeles. And it was the California chapter of the Archaeological Institute of America. So where we are placed in Southern California and the age of the Southwest Museum collections, there are a lot of materials we have in our collections that are of Native American cultural heritage objects and archives and images and sound recordings. So it's from working with those materials and following the actions of my predecessors, as well as evolving the activities based on what the protocols presented, again, how we aligned with the protocols just naturally, and just the, you know, the today's discourse in regards to how you work with Native materials. So all of that, all of those experiences all the way back from when I was a kid to now made me, I guess, sensitive to different types of interpretation of information and sensitive to the ways in which information should be treated and handled. I think there's a worldview aspect that I was open to with my various experiences, and that's what I think helps me along in looking at things a different way and think and challenging myself and myself challenging me in regards to things like, what do permissions mean? What does access mean? What does authoritative control mean? Where are the silences in the archives? It's been a long time coming. I've been here for 14 years. So it is unraveling it like a web in a way, and slowly and methodically doing it with collaboration with others.
Hmm. Yeah, well, thanks for telling us a little bit about your past experience and how this sort of worldview that you described and this phrase that you use, the stories in between, has sort of guided you through all these areas in your work. So Chris and I were so excited to hear that you've received funding from the SAA Foundation to create a workbook related to the protocols. So can you tell us a little bit about the workbook and when we can expect to see it?
What we would like to do with the workbook is develop it in between the Association of Tribal Archives and Library Museum Conference, or ATOM, which happens in October. So we kicked it off this October with what they call an Inspire Talk, which allows me 30 minutes to speak at the conference about the project and get feedback. And then hopefully at the next 2020 conference, we can have the working group develop the last phases of the workbook. And the workbook is not meant to be a completed document by October 2020, but it is supposed to be a good start or a good foundation to a working living document, because it really came about from my work with our repatriation officer, Lillian Posadas, and myself. When I say our repatriation officer, I mean at the Autry. And we had so many conversations and methodical steps towards creating policies and procedures, and even just language that could be transparent and can manage expectations of researchers and put us in place in regards to where the Autry stands in working with Native groups. We had said something like, isn't there a grant that would allow us to just do this work, to put these policies and make these policies available and make them in an orderly fashion? And so the Society of American Archivists Foundation was a great opportunity to do just that, where, you know, let's gather all these policies, procedures, these guidelines from these different entities that concentrate on the practical steps of working with archival materials along the lines of the protocols, but also how different archives may be contacted and what they might be expected to do or should do should that involve repatriation efforts. And so it's a very thin slice, but we felt that there was, you know, even with between the repatriation officer and myself, we did feel this obvious learning curve for both of us. You know, like, she had to come into my archive world and I had to tell her, well, this is how it's normally done. And I had to go into her repatriation world and her saying, well, these are the types of activities I'm involved with. And almost every repatriation officer I've spoken to, although it be a handful, have really indicated to me that archives are key in these repatriation efforts. But yet what I've witnessed in the archive profession, that this idea of repatriation is not as fully understood or fully known about in the archive world. So when we have our repatriation officer, she presented at the Society of American Archivists Conference, and at the end of the session, she was I don't want to say inundated, but she was. There was a lot of questions about, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? What happens when you do this? So they were procedural. They were, you know, the steps that involve repatriation, but yet how archivists can see themselves in there was a little, was new to a lot of them. And I'd even have to say that the Society of American Archivists definition of repatriation, it doesn't refer to NAGPRA. I think it's only a couple sentences. I don't have it in front of me. But even that kind of gives an indication of where the archive profession is in regards to their understanding of what repatriation is.
Well, we'll have to pass that on to the SAA glossary group, or maybe they're maybe they're listening.
That is one of my goals. That is one of my goals, to give them citations of articles and give them an example. Because I did submit something, but and I'm probably outing myself. but I didn't have any, you know, okay, this definition doesn't work. Maybe try this. I didn't have that second part. So. One of my hidden goals of this project is to present the SAA with a definition of repatriation that's a little bit more comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. Good. I think they'll be receptive. So you talked a little bit about your work at the Autry with the repatriation officer there. And in a recent Archival Outlook back in May, June of 2019, you and several other authors wrote about your different institutions' experience providing culturally responsive and ethical access to Indigenous collections. I wonder if you could tell us a little more about the statements that you've been working on at the Autry, and you had some nice pieces in your article about the collaborative processes that you used to create those.
Yeah, that was interesting. That, and I believe I state that slightly in the article. We only have little chunks,
right?
But there's the first paragraph took I don't know how many meetings to actually come up with the final of the first statements. And it's not necessarily a testament to the bureaucracy of the Autry, but more or less the conscientiousness that we wanted to take in our language, and it's developing and evolving. I should say right now that the libraries and archives of the Autry has been closed due to a collection move since 2016. So because of that, our research activities or our activities with our researchers have gone down a lot. So it gave us this wide berth to really examine, you know, what do we mean by access? And let's try out this statement. Okay, let's make it stronger. And we actually had a more, I think we're calling it right now a little access statement in our research application and our access policies that states that the Autry works to preserve and provide access to collections through proper and ethical stewardship. So although we want to promote access and we want to support scholarship and study, we feel just as importantly, and sometimes depending on the case, more importantly, to be good stewards and play an active role in consulting with the different Native nations and Indigenous communities on how to best describe and manage the collections that they're affiliated with. We talk about our stance at the Autry, and we just leave with the statement that for the researcher, that, you know, as we foster these relationships, we also encourage researchers to foster similar relationships, because it's going to come back around to that, especially when it's material pertaining to archaeological expeditions or things that might be culturally sensitive or things that are under the NAGPRA guidelines, such as ceremonial objects and objects of cultural patrimony. Photographs and sound recordings are very problematic when it comes to that because of what are they captured and how they were captured and why they were captured. So we put all of that in consideration into, I don't know how many words this is, in like a 70-word paragraph that just says, we want to promote scholarship, but we also feel because we have these materials, we need to step up our game in stewardship. And that has, that one statement is now being evolved to our rights and reproductions department. It's being evolved to our, you know, because we're a museum, we provide loans of our objects. So there's a statement there in loans. And I'm part of an interdepartmental task force to actually make this a value statement, to have this bloom into, this is one of the key values of the Autry. But it's, but like I said, it's been, it's taken a long time and it's cross-departmental. And it's also supported by our administration. I think that's the key thing, because although the these access statements reflect our attitudes and perceptions on how we would like to go forward, we probably wouldn't have been able to put it in something like our website, our research application, formal policies and procedures without without a green light from administration.
Wow, well, this is such important work, and I'm learning so much, and I really appreciate how, you know, you're talking about things like the workbook that you're involved in developing and how this will give us some, you know, practical steps to move forward at our own institutions, but also just the importance of sort of developing this habit of mind of thinking, rethinking how we think about research and how we think about access in relation to these materials. So the Native American Archivist section started this case study series on access policies for Native American materials. Can you tell us about the two that have been released so far, when we can expect to see more, and what else the section might have in store for the coming year?
Yeah, so the two, I believe, are from the American Philosophical Society, I believe is one of them. And the Klein Library of Arizona, and both those entities have been working with Native materials and the protocols. So they were really a good start in regards to how to implement, you know, the spirit of the protocols into everyday practices and policies. And the more that people know about the case studies, the more people are trickling in. And it's being handled right now, I think, by Rose Buchanan from NAAS. And I know that I've got one that I will be submitting later this year, but I think they're shooting for, you know, every few months to have more case studies. But since the endorsement of the protocols, there has been a need and a push to have workshops and sessions about implementing the protocols. So I think my workbook is coming at a time where other resources are being created as well. I also heard that ACRL just endorsed the protocols recently. And I know that the National Endowment for Humanities refers to the protocols for their for one of their grants that are centered on Indigenous collections. So it's definitely becoming, the protocols are becoming indoctrinated, institutionalized in various professional organizations. And I think now that they, that that's happened, other institutions, other smaller individual, you know, collections and museums, libraries, archives, now can lean on that as support to tell their administration, okay, this is a policy that we need to change. And I think NAAS is, or NAS is right, a great resource for that. So we represent at ATOM, and we're providing or developing these workshops and case studies, but we are also trying to make our section accessible. So, you know, with our, we're trying to beef up our social media feed and a blog post that also helps get the word out. But in our listserv, we do stress to people, especially at ATOM, that you don't have to be part of SAA to be part of our listserv. And that's a great way to just get casual conversations going.
Great. Yeah, it definitely seems like you all are especially active these days, which is always great to see. Our final question we usually like to say is the most important question, and we never really mean that, because it's not, but we really don't mean it today, because what you've talked about is has been so important to what we need to be thinking about as archivists going forward. But let's just call it the most important question. So what superpower would you most like to have and why?
I think the superpower would be to clone all the superstars out there that are on this front, because honestly, it's all these people that are working towards these efforts and really want to make a difference. We just need more of them, and we need more time, and we just need more work needs to be done. So one of the things that it almost seems like most conversations come to this point when it comes to involving the groups, you know, we're now opening up, right, these better relationships, having this clearer understanding of where these native materials could have come from and how they could have been described, and how it could have led to maybe misleading or impoverished records or records that need better description. And so that is what I'm calling a data crisis, because every institution has metadata that needs to do better. And we not only need to do better, but we need to build out our schema so that this input from different groups through different history, through the legacy, can be put in a place that can be kept into perpetuity. And I know that Mukurtu and the tribal knowledge labels are working on that, but we're all working toward this goal, I believe, if I may speak loosely for them, but this goal to get the information more in an even playing field, like to get the information described by the people that are being represented in those materials. And that just takes, if you can imagine, even if you have 100 pictures in your institution, how much time that would take to give it that conscientiousness. If I had a superpower, I would clone all these wonderful people that are doing this great work and are moving forward and also in providing experiences for a new generation of professionals, and just clone them by 1,000, 2,000. That's what'd be my superpower.
That's great. I think my superpower might be when somebody tells me what their superpower is to not think of all the complications that could come up.
Right.
When you have.
I definitely know there would be like ethical. That's a different set of ethical content. So in my cloning, it was like cloning in the perfect world. And there were everybody, cloning in the perfect world where everybody just behaves.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today and for all of this fabulous work that you are doing.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
You've just listened to an episode of Archives in Context, the official podcast of the Society of American Archivists. Members of the podcast team include Bethany Anderson, Chris Burns, Ashley Levine, Nicole Milano, Anna Trammell, and Colleen McFarlane Rademacher. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are not reflective of a particular institution. Be sure to like us on iTunes if you enjoyed what you heard, and join us again next time.